You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, December 23rd, 2024. Grandpa Dan streaming with you, radioalbion.com. Tomorrow's Christmas Eve. You'll get a Christmas Eve edition of the Parish of the Patriots. Hopefully all of you noticed Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is back with us. He was back in time, surprised me even. He was back in time to get us a Daily Nationalist last Thursday. So if you missed out on that, you be sure and check it out. Well, it is Monday, which means, yes, once again, we're doing Daily Mail Monday, where I grab snippets of various articles from the Daily Mail, some of which are ridiculous. I slog through the poor sentence structure, grammatical errors, and just lack of overall editorial oversight. I make that sacrifice for you, the listener, for you, the listeners. And this gives us some of the gives us some of the various news topics versus just picking one thing and going through it. So the first story I've got here is one of the things that's been making the news this morning. Biden makes stunning move to commute sentences of 37 death row criminals before Trump takes office. Now, right off the bat, you have to chuckle to yourself. For the simple fact that the insinuation, the media is still going along here with the insinuation that Joe Biden is actually doing anything. Remember, we just did a Daily Nationalist on now. They're coming out and admitting that actually he's been senile since day one in office. The major media, they now come out and they're admitting that we've been right all along. This guy doesn't know whether he's horseback or foot. And yet they flip around. And in a story like this, they still make the insinuation that Joe Biden is sitting around making these decisions. They should use the more honest phrase, the more honest terminology of the quote unquote, the Biden administration, because Joe Biden isn't making any of these decisions by their own admission. And yet they still insinuate here that it's Joe Biden. See, that way we're not asking who exactly is making these decisions. Joe Biden. No, we did not. But they make the claim without evidence that Joe Biden announced on Monday that he is commuting the sentences of 37 of the 40 people on federal death row. He is converting their punishments to life in prison just weeks before President-elect Donald Trump, a.k.a. the evil orange man, takes office, who is planning to expand the death penalty. The move spares the lives of people convicted of killings, including the slayings of police and military officers, people on federal land, and those involved in deadly bank robberies or drug deals, as well as the killings of guards or prisoners in federal facilities. It means just three federal inmates are still facing execution, including the Boston Marathon bomber and hate crime killers. Now, convicted murderers, bank robbers, kidnappers, and rapists will escape federal execution. Now, everything here in clown world, they do these things. Everything is always so often framed as some sort of morality play, you know, some sort of morality issue. They will frame these things up. For instance, they'll say, oh, we've got to go bomb insert whichever country here because they're violating the human rights of the citizens there. Or whatever. Everything is framed up as this morality. And it's, of course, it's always fake. Here, they frame up this morality play. The reason the Joe Biden administration is doing this is on moral grounds. Because, you see, they do not believe. They morally do not believe in the death penalty. It's wrong for the government to carry out the death penalty. And, you know, that's all well and good. You know, I'm not necessarily even in disagreement with that. Just, you know, because of the level of corruption of the government. However, this claim of some sort of moralistic high ground quickly falls flat. Because, you see, the insinuation is made here that they are morally opposed. They put a moratorium on the death penalty. They don't believe in it. They just don't believe that the government should be in the business of executing people, no matter how heinous the crime is. But you see where this falls flat, because they've made three exceptions. You see, this is where it quickly falls apart. On the one hand, they make the claim to be coming from this moral position of simply not believing in the death penalty. Oh, except for these three guys. Because they're hate crime killers. They haven't, you know, when you get down to the mechanics of it, they still killed people. But yet, for some reason, they don't fall into this moral paradigm, this moral framework that they're attempting. See, it's very cynical, isn't it? If you simply do not believe, look, if you do not believe, and again, there's nothing wrong with that. If you do not believe the government should have the authority to execute anybody, and instead heinous criminals should be put on in prison with no possibility of parole, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you truly believe that, then there are no exceptions. You don't say, well, everybody except somebody who did a quote-unquote hate crime. You either believe that or you don't. So under the least little bit of scrutiny, this moral posturing, it falls flat very quickly, doesn't it? Because they're making notable exceptions. But if you don't believe in the government carrying out the death penalty, then you don't believe in it. You know, if they're getting life without parole, what's the difference, right? Why make the exceptions for these other three guys? And again, that's not to get into the debate over, you know, the death penalty. You know, I personally am not necessarily opposed to the death penalty. However, my misgivings are the justice system and the government itself has become so utterly corrupt that you have to question how many people could be put on death row that it winds up they're innocent. You know, you've got this system now where prosecutors, I'm getting off on a tangent, but you have a system in place now where prosecutors will hide evidence. They will ignore evidence that shows they got the wrong guy because all they care about is getting the conviction. And the more poor you are, the more highly likely that you don't have a chance in hell to defend yourself. They'll railroad you through and they'll stick you on death row or in prison or whatever the case may be. It's been demonstrated that the system is very corrupt. And justice is just, I mean, it's just a pipe dream. It's not reality. If you get caught up in this system, you stand basically no chance of really being able to defend yourself. Now, just as far as the idea of people that go out and kill people, should they get the death penalty? I'm not opposed to that. But when you look at the state of the system now, yeah, I mean, I understand people that are against the death penalty, and I don't necessarily think they're wrong just because the system, you know, is so corrupt. Again, you have many, you've got well-documented cases where prosecutors essentially will hide or at the very least ignore evidence that shows you've got the wrong guy. You know, unlike on the TV shows where that happens and the prosecutors immediately drop the charges. Oh, my gosh, we almost did a miscarriage of justice. They don't care. There's one. No. Can we get this guy convicted so we can put that down in our books and move on? So, yeah, I mean, either way, you know, as far as the death penalty itself, I go either way. But I do think it's silly for them to make this morality play that they're commuting these death sentences because they don't believe in the death penalty. With the exception of three people. That just throws the moral argument out because you either believe in it or you don't. And in a way, they're claiming that the lives of the people, you know, that were killed by the ones that did have these sentences commuted, they somehow count less than the lives of the ones who did not get death penalty sentences commuted. Anyway, we're gonna keep moving on. We mentioned, this notion that Joe Biden is making decisions being utterly ridiculous. And we've got a related story next up. And this is a congresswoman from here in Texas. Care Home congresswoman breaks her silence after raking in $170,000 salary despite not working. Of course, I have to stop here because the notion that we should be upset over the $170,000 salary when that is just chicken feed for what these congresspeople make, because they make their money off of the payoffs and the bribes. Well, they call it different things. It's rude to call them payoffs and bribes, but they're payoffs and bribes. I laugh when people make fun of countries such as Mexico or various Latin American countries. Say, oh, they're not like America. They're very corrupt. Why, you could get, you got to pay off public officials. See, I think it's much more straightforward in those countries. The public official shows up and says, well, you can't do this. And you say, what's it going to cost for me to say that I can? And the guy says, you know, $100, $200, $500. There's an amount. And you pay him, and then he fills out the form, says, yeah, he can go ahead and do that. At least the little guy, at least in Latin American countries, the little guy has a chance to get in on being able to pay these people off so that they can go on and do what they need to do. You see, here in America, you have no chance if you're a little guy. You don't get to pay anybody off. They just come down and tell you what you can and cannot do. However, if you're one of these big guys, if you're a corporation, if you're a powerful lobbying group, you can pay off whoever and get to do whatever, basically whatever the hell you want to. You see, Latin American countries are much more for the little man. The little man can bribe the officials and be able to build a deck or whatever it is he's wanting to do. In America, only the ultra wealthy, only the ultra wealthy get to have their own personal bought and paid for bureaucrats and politicians. Republican Congresswoman Kay Granger has released her first public statement after she was found to be living in a senior care facility while raking in her $174,000 salary. Kay Granger, 81, has been living in the $4,000 a month nursing home for the past 6 months after found wandering, lost, and confused through her neighborhood. The Texas representative, who hasn't cast a vote in 6 months, was set to wind up a nearly 30-year career in the House in January, but has now ignited fury over elderly politicians holding on to power and has sparked debate over America's aging political class. In a statement released Sunday, Granger said, again, the senile old lady supposedly said this, I am deeply grateful for the outpouring of care and concern over the past several days. She did not address her current residence, but admitted to health challenges over the past year while serving in Congress on a $174,000 salary. You got to love how the Daily Mail pretends like that's what they're there for. These congresspeople, they just want to get in there so they can rake in that $174,000. Now, granted, the reason they do that is because for people like you and me, aka poor people, $174,000 sounds like a lot of money. But yet we all know the likes of Nancy Pelosi and really probably virtually all of these other people, they're worth millions. They go into the House of Representatives, they go into Congress, and, you know, they don't have that much money. And then they're in there for 30 years and they got a whole lot of money. I wonder how much money is in Kay Granger's account. They don't talk about that. It ain't from no $174,000. We all know how they spend billions of dollars on presidential campaigns for a couple hundred grand a month or a year. I'm sorry. I mean, come on. The payoff is what they're there for, not the salary. Hell, they could just rescind. If they came out today and said, congresspeople are not paid anything, they have to work for free. That way they'll work for the people. You know what? These people would still spend millions of dollars to get these jobs. You see, the salary is just a fig leaf of the corruption. They claim they try to act like, oh no, they go to the Congress because they want that $174,000. If you took away the $174,000, these people would still camp there for 30 years. You know, because that's a joke. And this article is laughable. Like, they insinuate that 174,000. Why don't they tell us how much money she actually has? Tell us her net worth. Because I can guarantee you, you could quickly do some rudimentary math and you would find out that there ain't no way she got that much money on 174 grand a year. It's laughable. Now, as is always with these Daily Mail articles, I don't go through the whole thing. Nevertheless, so I just say that nevertheless, you've got other Congress people. This, I hate this theater. I really do. I hate the theater. Because you have all these other Congress people coming out and kvetching over this. Oh my goodness, this is just horrible. Why? It turns out nobody knew where this old lady with this congresswoman was. And it turns out she's in a nursing home. Somebody started looking for it. She's in a nursing home because she has dementia. She doesn't know where she is. And these Congress people are kvetching and go, this is horrible. This is horrible. My gosh, we've had a looming government shutdown, and we've got the orange man coming in, and we've got, oh my gosh, world war could break out at any moment, and this congresswoman's in a nursing home. And we're going to ignore the fact that Joe Biden has been senile since day one. Since day one, not recently, since day one. Joe Biden is still supposedly the president of the United States for a little less than a month to go now. And that's not a problem. Since we know by articles written by the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times themselves admitting now, like I said on my show, debunking, they've debunked the debunk. Turns out they're admitting that since day one, he hasn't known where he is. And they, We've got all these conflicts going on, the U.S. on the brink of getting jumping into a bunch of other stupid wars. Seemed to me like it might be a big deal that the commander-in-chief is in the corner playing with his Legos. But once again, we ignore that. I said this recently. They give you these stories, these narratives, these tales they tell you. And they always want you to view them in a vacuum. They want you to read a story like this and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe this old lady. She'd been in a nursing home, but she's technically still a congressperson. This is one of the part of the program they just constantly flood you with crap because they don't want you to be able to stand back and look at the big picture and go, well, they don't have a problem with Joe Biden being in there after the debate proved that we were right and he's senile. Nobody said, oh my gosh, you got to get this guy out of here. We have to have somebody in charge. Nobody's even asking the question of who the hell's in charge. And it just keeps flowing, doesn't it? Nobody really noticed this old lady wasn't there. How important are these politicians when they can be AWOL in a nursing home, in the corner playing with blocks, taking his daily nap after his ice cream cone, and nobody notices any different? The system just keeps on rolling. How indispensable are these politicians, or do they do anything at all? Except do customer service. While the bureaucracy, while the system just grinds on, sometimes on little more than mere momentum. Another story making the rounds here. A suspect arrested after woman was set on fire and burned to death on the subway in broad daylight. A suspect has been arrested for allegedly setting a sleeping woman on fire on board the New York City subway. Sebastian Zapeta, 33, a Guatemalan migrant, was taken into custody after he allegedly lit the woman on fire and fled the scene, according to Fox News. He was caught while riding a train at 34th Street, Manhattan. When three high schoolers identified him and waved down the cops, the New York Post reports. The train was ordered to stop at the next station, where two transit officers boarded the train and located the person of interest before taking him into custody. Zapeta is accused of lighting the woman on fire at around 7:29 a.m. on Sunday. He has not been formally charged. Police say the victim was sleeping when Zapeta, who was sitting across from her on board an F train at a station in Coney Island, got up, walked over, and lit her on fire. The suspect used what we believe to be a lighter to ignite the woman's clothing, which became fully engulfed in a matter of seconds, Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch said at a news conference on Sunday night. Now, kind of like Biden, the migrants, the illegal immigrants, are kind of being thrown under the bus now. You see, they gave us stories for years about these poor huddled people. We got the pictures of the crying children, and they're just fleeing the brutal civil war in Guatemala or whatever the hell. And now here recently, we're getting stories such as this. Now, there's some parts of the story that obviously are incomplete. There's no way he just walked up. Now, later in the story, again, I do short versions. Later in the story, they say, well, the woman, I suspect she must have been homeless. I don't know this. But they said the woman was surrounded by liquor bottles, and the police do not know if that had anything to do with the case. Well, it must have. Because I'm going to tell you what, there's no way you could just walk up and light your clothes on fire, and within seconds, whoosh. See, when I started to read this story, I expected they were going to say, for some reason, he had a bottle of lighter fluid on him or some gas and tossed it on her and lit her off. But no, they say he just walked over and with a lighter lit her clothes on fire. And she was fully engulfed in a matter of seconds. So my guess is she's homeless. My guess is all the liquor bottles laying around, she basically was just soaked in alcohol. I don't know. I'm just guessing because there's no way. You know, take one of your old t-shirts that you don't care about anymore. Take it outside and take a lighter to it. I mean, yeah, it's going to burn. But I mean, you would, if you were just sleeping somewhere and your clothes caught on fire, you're going to jump up and you'd be ripping that stuff off. They're not going to just whoosh up. Now, used to be clothes would do that. But now your clothes have, you know, the way they're made up, they're not going to just instantly light off. I think she was probably soaked in booze. But nevertheless, I mean, what a backwater shithole this country is. Who would want to go to New York, you know? I mean, and it's funny because New Yorkers are kind of like the British. You know how like the British like to LARP like they're still the empire upon which the sun never sets. Oh, you don't want the mighty British Empire to be stirring your way. And it's just a joke island. I mean, it's just a joke island. But they still like to LARP. New Yorkers are like that. They like to LARP like New York is the center of the universe still. Like, oh, everybody in this country just wishes. They just wish they, too, could live in New York. If you came to me and said, damn, we've got a free week-long all-expense paid vacation for you to New York City. We're going to pay you airfare. We're going to pay everything. Meals, hotel. We're going to put you up. You get to go from your backwater state of Texas. You get to go to the one and only Big Apple. You get to go to Gotham. You get to go to New York City. And it's not going to cost you a thing. I ain't going. I'm not. But it's free. I don't care. I have no desire to go to a third world shithole of a city where this is the sort of thing that happens. Oh, but you could ride the subway. Have you seen the videos of the subway with the rats and the filth and the criminality and the homeless and all the rest of it? No. Why would I want to do that? I would rather go to, I don't know, some third world Middle Eastern or African country. Seriously, why would I not? I would be more interested in going to Uganda. I would rather go to Uganda than go to New York City. If I want to experience diversity, I'm going to go experience diversity where it comes from. You have to laugh how all these countries, in this case Guatemala, they were able to unload all their lunatics, criminals, and basically low-tier trash out of their country. It just, America will take them. They're not sending their best. They haven't been sending their best and brightest. This whole diversity being our strength thing, I don't know. Doesn't seem like it's working out that well. For our final story, I'm looking at the time. We got a time for one more, and this is my... You know, like I always say, one of the things, you know, like war propaganda. The Daily Mail does the most absurd, ridiculous war propaganda. The Russia, the Ukraine-Russia war stuff is always extremely hilarious. But now we've shifted. We've got Syria stuff to talk about. As is wont of the Daily Mail, they write headlines that are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 full lines long, which is utterly ridiculous. Nevertheless, here's the headline. rape hell in Assad's prisons. Former inmate describes how he saw boy cry for his mother as he was sexually assaulted by Syrian torturers and was himself gang raped by three quote-unquote laughing, I don't know why that's in quotes, but anyway, laughing guards. They do a whole paragraph and use it for the headline. Anyway, let's delve into this story and see if we can just get a handle on the likelihood of the level on a scale of 1 to 10. How much truthfulness is involved here, or how much of this might just be some atrocity propaganda. Let's see here. A former inmate in one of Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad's prisons has revealed how he saw a boy cry for his mother while he was sexually abused by his torturers. Rene, one of 6 million Syrians. I'm just reading the article, y'all. It's always the 6 million. I don't know what the magic of the number. Rene, one of 6 million Syrians who fled the country following the brutal civil war in 2012, was imprisoned. More clues coming up. Was imprisoned for being gay and for going to a pro-democracy protest by Assad's secret police. He said that while he was in prison, he saw a boy no older than 16 getting raped by Assad's guards. Rene told the BBC, there was a boy. He was 15 or 16 years old. They were raping him, and he was calling for his mother. He was saying, Mama, my mother, Mom. Rene himself was also raped by three guards who laughed when he begged for mercy. Nobody heard me. I was alone, he recalled, back in 2012. He said it's not me misspeaking. It's once again the lack of editorial oversight. Nobody apparently proofreads these articles for the Daily Mail. He said he was abused for every 6 months by the same guard. So we have an admitted homosexual who was going to pro-democracy protests, a.k.a. CIA agitation protests, goes here, and we get this, lots of stories about gang rape of young boys. No doubt by the hardcore Islamic guards or something. How much true, how much not true? You just have to judge for yourself, because this is just this guy making the claim. Anybody can make the claim. I can sit here and tell y'all I've got more money than Jeff Bezos. I mean, you can claim anything. And yet we get a story like this, and the media, once again, as they frame a narrative, they will use this guy as a source without any kind of, you know, where's the, with making the claim without evidence thing? Where's the evidence that any of this took place? So the guy's an admitted homosexual, and what a shock. All of his stories, all of his atrocity stories here, his recollection of atrocities in the prison, they all center around homosexual acts. That's kind of strange, isn't it? Almost like, why this young boy, no more than 15 or 16 years old, being anally raped or crying out for his mother. You have to wonder, is this truly a recollection, or is this sort of some sort of perverse fantasy? I don't know. And I'm not trying to smear anybody, but come on. It's kind of curious that you have an admitted homosexual here and all of his atrocity stories centers around homosexuality. Again, the sentence structure is so poorly written here. I don't know what they're saying, because he makes the claim that the same guard every 6 months abused him. I don't know if they're claiming that for 6 months he was abused by the same guard, or if this guard, just for whatever reason, every 6 months would come to this guy. Perhaps he was having homosexual relations with one of the guards. I mean, it's all so convoluted. And yet, these stories get put out by the likes of the Daily Mail. And you're just supposed to swallow them, hook, line, and sinker. But this guy said it happens. You're not supposed to say, well, it's kind of weird. He didn't see any other kind of atrocity going on besides just the gay stuff. It's kind of curious. There is some other ridiculous stuff in here. I guess we can go through some more of this. According to the Syrian Network for Human Rights, which is a made-up Western thing, but anyway, the network also documented 72 different methods of regime torture that included electrocuting genitals. If you're going to torture people, I mean, you know, there's evil people that just like to cause suffering and pain. This is true. But I mean, why is so much of this always, I mean, the first rattle out of the box, it's always like genetic, you know, genital electrocution. I mean, there's other things you could do, but let's go ahead. Or hanging weights from them. You're hanging, what, a dumbbell off of somebody's nutsack. That seems like a lot of work. Burning with oil, metal rods, gunpowder, or flammable pesticides. Crushing heads between a wall and the prison cell door, and inserting needles or metal pins into bodies. For most detainees, the horror began immediately upon arrest, often with savage beatings en route to detention facilities. Now, that part I believe. I believe they're going to kick your ass. I mean, that's a more straightforward of what you would expect to see before you get into, now we're going to take this 10-pound weight and hang it off of your balls. Survivors have described being suspended by the wrists for hours, enduring electric shocks, and being burned with cigarettes. Now, those sound like kind of typical, you know, sort of things you would expect from these. So these may be a little closer to the truth. Once trapped behind bars, prisoners quickly became acquainted with all manner of novel torture methods. Some so notorious they've been given dark monikers. One such grotesque device, nicknamed the flying carpet, saw prisoners shackled to a board, strapped onto a flexible board split in half by chain metal hinges. Guards would then lift the bottom half of the board and fold the prisoner's legs back toward them, slowly and excruciatingly crushing them into horrific positions. Another such torture tactic was called the dulab, in which victims' bodies were contorted into a rubber tire, their heads pressed into their knees before being rolled around and beaten mercilessly. Now, how are you going to beat them when they're inside the tire? I don't know. Yeah, they mix a little bit of stuff. You know, the getting your ass kicked on the way there, that's probably true. Getting burned with cigarettes, I can see that. But then you get into these more outlandish claims. And you have to wonder, you know, because people can be cruel by nature, but people are also kind of lazy by nature. This seems like a whole lot of work. You're going to invent this thing. We're going to shove this guy and stuff him into a tire somehow with him resisting, roll him around and beat him with a tire that's surrounding him somehow. It's like you put armor on him in the form of the tire, and now you're beating him with something. None of this makes any sense. And why? Who got picked? And for what reason? You know, it's not as though they're torturing them for information. If they say, well, these guys had information and they were being tortured for that information, they're just making it out like this is torture all for the lulz. It doesn't really make any sense. And then finally, you have to look at this again, not in a vacuum, not compartmentalized. You have to look at this in the context of what the U.S. military was doing in Iraq. Remember that one? That they got so bent that they went after Assange for years over what they were doing. And there were pictures. Unlike this, where we're just getting these eyewitness accounts. In other words, some guy said, with what the U.S. military was doing to Iraqi prisoners in Iraq, there's actual pictures of some of the weirdo stuff they were doing. But you see, you're not supposed to think about that because that's not the story for today. The story for today is evil Assad and the latest 6 million that were tortured in his prison. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you have a great week. I hope you have a Merry Christmas. If you're out traveling, be careful out there. Again, I'll be back tomorrow with the Parish of the Patriots. Dr. Johnson will be here Wednesday with the Orthodox Nationalists. I expect Dr. Johnson to have a Thursday show, Daily Nationalist up. And I have every intention to be back here Friday to wrap up your week with the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist. So again, have a Merry Christmas, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.